Welcome into the BBP. This is the Bengals Beat Podcast presented by Inquirer Sports. Here, your Cincinnati.com Bengals beat writers, Paul Diener Jr. and Jim Ossarski, invite you beyond the headlines and inside Paul Brown Stadium for the scoop on all things Bengals. Find out the insider news as well as listening on conversations with players, coaches, and others relevant to the club. Remember, you can subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. Just search Inquirer Bengals Beat Podcast. And as always, you can listen on our free Cincinnati Inquirer Bengals app. If you don't have the app, well, I suggest rectifying that situation immediately in the App Store. Now, if you're down with BBP, let's go. All right, welcome into the BBP. Paul Diener Jr. and Jim Ossarski, your Bengals beat writer, Cincinnati.com, the Cincinnati Inquirer. How we doing?
Good, good. It's, it was a festive Sunday evening and, well, not so much Monday at Paul Brown, but,
yeah,
you know, it's a win.
It was a festivus for the rest of us.
Yeah, it was.
It was for, the winning feel. It had been a long time since this.
Yeah.
We had covered a winning locker room.
Yes,
it's obviously a different feel after a win than it is to a loss. And it was just, I mean, they beat the Browns obviously this weekend's opponent, but not since September 29th had they beaten a non-winless team.
Right.
Yeah. And they pull off the 32-14 win over the Eagles. It just had been a long time, I think, since anybody had felt good. You know, Jeremy Hill sort of said to me after the game, he said, this entire organization needed this win. I just think everybody was just daubers down for so long that they just needed something for people to feel good about.
Yeah. Yeah, it was the best 30 minutes of football teams played all year, first half, without a doubt. You know, second half, I think it didn't look like blowout football at the end. You know, some turnovers. The Eagles finally got some stuff going. But that first 30 minutes, defense gets off the field. Lo and behold, offense takes a lead, scoring on five straight possessions in the half. It was strong.
And offense just keeps scoring.
Yeah.
They scored on each of their first six possessions, and not until they started fumbling there at the end did they stop putting it in. I mean, really, the Eagles couldn't stop them all day.
Right.
It's, you know, by all accounts, not a terrible Eagles defense. I mean, their defense had been okay.
Yeah,
this
their defense had been actually top 10 in both points allowed and total yardage heading in. Now, they were backsliding. They were trending in the wrong direction.
Right.
So the Bengals took advantage of that. But, yeah, you're right. Paul was – look, I said it last week at this time, and on Thursday's BBP2, I thought we'd see more of the same from the Bengals. I mean, I had seen nothing to lead me to believe this was coming.
No.
But I give him credit, you know. Andy Dalton was really good. He had time. Receivers got open in one-on-one situations. Again, stuff we just haven't seen.
Yeah, first time this year he wasn't sacked.
Yeah.
Only took one hit, and that would end up being a personal foul.
Yeah.
I mean, you're right. They stopped him on the first drive of the game. They didn't allow a sack. They didn't really have a fourth quarter collapse because the game was out of hand.
Right.
All the things that had been haunting them.
Yeah.
Didn't for one day, and it's just one of those things you wonder. It's hard, almost hard after a game like that to sit back and not be like, where the hell has this been?
Right.
I mean, if you're a coach or a player on this team, how do you sit back and be like, why have we not been? You just played four teams that were very similar to the Eagles. The Eagles are probably a little worse just because they really are backsliding.
Right.
And they're not great. They struggle on the road. But, I mean, the Bills were flawed. The Ravens are flawed.
Right.
The Redskins are flawed.
Sure,
the Giants are flawed. Yeah. I mean, they're not great teams. They're not going to be world killers. They're not the Dallas Cowboys or the New England Patriots of this year. So to be this good against them and have been so mediocre or worse against the others, I think is one of those things where you just throw your hands up as a coach and say, "Geez, unbelievable."
Yeah, it's you're right, Paul. It definitely was one of those. This is how they expected to play at the very beginning of the year. Yeah. You know, and I know, you know, some of the guys are still saying it. Oh, it takes time with new coaches or new players, and that's fine. I buy that to an extent, but not in week 12.
No.
Like, week 12 shouldn't be the jump
Barely
off.
Barely in week 5.
Yeah, no.
You have all off season to get over that crap.
If anything, it was what we thought of. Like, the Washington game and then the bye. Like, you know, it shouldn't have taken this long.
No, it really shouldn't have. So that's where they're at. Let's get into some of the logistics of what comes out of this game. And, you know, so really we'll start on offense, where we kind of caught a surprise before the game started, where they said, non-injury related starting lineup change.
Yeah.
Cedric Obwehi not going to start this week. Eric Winston starting in his place. So your original thought is, I wonder if they're just swapping Winston as the starter for some reason.
Right.
Is it still Obwehi? And then, lo and behold, first two series go to Winston. Third series, Jake Fisher comes out playing right tackle. And that ended up being the rotation. It was 2-2 into the fourth quarter, really, when Andrew Whitworth goes down and Jake Fisher has to go over to left and kind of threw the whole thing out. But look, it was going to be 2-2, right. It looked like, the majority of the game. So the Cedric Obwehi devolution continues. So now let's track what's happened. He's gone from this guy is the man. We have to get rid of Andre Smith to clear a place for him to start.
Yeah.
He is a generational type of athletic talent.
Which is what they've said.
Two, after New England, okay, we're going to scale back. We pulled him back, and we're going to have him in a rotation with Eric Winston, but he's still playing 66% of the time. It's just two and then one, so he can sit back occasionally and watch. Then a few weeks later, it turns into a 50-50 split with Eric Winston, and Winston happens to be in at the end critical end points of all these games. Now benched from his starting role, and not even – him and A.J. McCarron, the only two people active on the roster that didn't play yesterday. Yeah. Not good.
No.
If you're Cedric Obwehi.
No. It's quite a tumble.
And he's quite frankly earned it. I mean, he's just been a liability. And, you know, Marvin Lewis kind of said when I asked him about what was holding backs from putting Jake Fisher out there, it was – we got to make sure we protect the guy under center who's the franchise quarterback. You can't just throw anybody out there.
Which is funny to say, Paul, because on Jake Fisher said Sunday, he found out on Wednesday he was going to be part of the rotation. I mean, Wednesday is the only real practice this team has, and I don't even think they were in pads this week. I think this is one of their non-padded weeks, you know, by rule or however they count that. So, you know, I mean, that's all well and good to say by Marvin standards, but like, to me, they're trying to protect Andy, but if that's the case, like, you gave Jake Fisher 2 days' notice. You know, like, what happened in practice? What happened in the last, like, week? You know what I mean?
You know, we heard last week that they were encouraged by the way that he had played in Baltimore.
Which we all kind of scratched our heads about, kind of like.
Yeah. You really can't believe anything a coach ever tells you, I guess.
Yeah.
It's probably the side of that. And to be honest, it's the same question that we had sort of been talking about for a while now with this team was, boy, they must really think very low of Jake Fisher.
Right.
Because why had he not even gotten a shot through all the struggles that Obwehi had been having and going to a rotation with a guy who is just not what he used to be in Eric Winston, fine mentor and leader and all that stuff, but, you know, he's not running around like he's 26 anymore.
Yeah.
So what's wrong with the guy who was the second-round pick that year who they liked so much? And I think we kind of got the answer that they had finally just kind of had it and just wanted to try something new. Jake Fisher, you know, by review, you know, I went back through the snaps and watched all the snaps and asked Marvin Lewis about it. Certainly up and down.
Yeah.
Started off a little rough with a whiff that forced the personal foul where Brandon Graham ends up.
Yeah.
Trouncing Andy Dalton's knee, and you got to think that was the first series. You got to think they're sitting there thinking like, "Oh my God, what did we do?"
Yeah,
you know. But then after that, that happened a few more times to Fisher. But for the most part, either the play went the other way or it was a quick throw.
Right.
It was hidden. And they were able – and, you know, Dalton didn't get sacked all day. I want to bring in me sort of starting off the questioning, asking Marvin about the move to Jake Fisher and what this means for Cedric Obwehi. So here's some of that from Monday's press conference.
How'd you feel Jake Fisher did yesterday?
Jake was a little antsy.
Is that a figure a common – thing for a guy?
I think so. I think particularly him. We know how bad he wants things to be right. And, you know, there's nobody that works harder or more passionate about this than Jake Fisher. And I think that's, you know, that's something he, you know, his first real exposure. Again, he's a guy who hadn't played any preseason games, you know what I mean? For as much as, you know, we like, you know, both those young kids, for whatever reason, have just not had an opportunity to be consistent and have the preseasons and the things that you'd like guys to have to grow through. And, you know, so, you know, all of their stuff has been when things have been on the line, all their reps and all their plays. When it's really important, it's on the line. And, you know, they're conscientious. They want it to be right. And, you know. Sometimes you overthink things and get a little tense with it, but you know, he's been able to relate it well.
You obviously want to get those guys reps. What's been the biggest thing that's kind of held you back to wanting to get Jake in there earlier or finding a place, or is it just not having a place?
Well, it's you know, you get set up the way you're set up, but the most, you know, we've got the most valuable thing is the guy behind center, and not to get him exposed.
That said, you've got a veteran guy in Eric Winston who stepped up and played pretty effectively, didn't he?
Yeah, you know, I mean, Eric has been obviously he's been a blessing since he's been here with us. And, you know, he continues to answer the bell every time he's called upon. And he stepped up and he just fights his tail off and he's good for the team. Just the way his mentality and preparation and so forth. So those young guys can't have better mentors than what they have.
What's your message and your next step with Cedric Obwehi now?
Just practice, go out and practice hard. Practice hard and you'll get opportunities and let's make good on them.
So really where that line of questioning ends is where we'll start. What is the future for Cedric Obwehi after this latest complete benching?
Yeah, I have a hard time prognosticating down the line here, Paul. Because I think as long as the Bengals are still trying to sniff some semblance of the division title, which means maybe that's a loss against Pittsburgh in 2 weeks at 1 o'clock on Sunday, or if they somehow beat the Steelers. I mean, I think as long as there's still some semblance of a hope, he's done, in my opinion. I mean, maybe they bring him back for a couple sets, but going forward, more importantly, like you say, Andrew Whitworth's a free agent. Eric Winston's a free agent, getting a little older. What do you do there? I still think the thought is put some weight on him and try it again in camp, except the difference maybe being instead of being gifted the right tackle job, he has to compete with Jake Fisher for that spot and prove that he earned it. You know, I think Andrew Whitworth sitting back and is like he's counting his paper right now.
Yep.
I mean, he understood the situation. He understood why he wasn't offered an extension. Pretty clear to me about that way back in the offseason. But now, you know, if you're Witt, you know you're going to have people knocking on your door for at least a one-year deal.
Show me the money.
Show me the money. Show me 2 years.
Show me 2 years of that money.
Yeah.
Because you don't have another answer in this building.
Right.
To left tackle. I mean, imagine if Witt were to leave.
Yeah.
I mean, where they would be. They'd have to go get a veteran at the very least. I mean, that's a lot of off-season talk that we'll have time to get into.
Right. So I think that's the future, though. I think it's set is done until they're out, and then. But more importantly, it's they want to see him build up some strength and then compete.
He needs a healthy preseason.
Yeah.
To go out there and prove that he's figured, and this is the issue, is that. You get into the offseason where, as an offensive lineman, you really can't practice fully.
Especially the issue he's having, which is getting power, bull rush. How do you practice that?
He's just getting, but he's getting stronger.
Yes.
And he's just getting tossed back over and over and over again right up into the quarterback's grill.
Maybe that's one of those, Paul, where you, as a young lineman who's, you know, now you got to fight to be relevant. You know, maybe you push yourself a little bit and be a little more physical in the offseason. Stay in Cincinnati with the Bengals staff and be like, hit me. I mean, I know you can't do pads and helmets, but you know what I'm trying to say? Like, just be a little more.
He's got to find an anchor.
Yeah, you got to find something to learn how to handle a bull rush.
Yeah. So we'll see. And you know what? Here's the thing. And maybe you can make an argument that they should have moved to Jake Fisher earlier or given him a shot earlier. That's all fine. You know,
he was a backup left tackle. I don't.
Yeah, I think there was more the fact that they just had him in his spot and were reluctant to have him now go learn something else new and muddle the waters.
Right.
Obviously, they're more willing to do that. Now, we have seen so many times with this club that they draft two of the same position and the last guy drafted ends up being better.
Yeah.
Marvin Jones, Mohamed Sanu, Brandon Thompson, Devin Still, although neither of them have made a significant impact, one is still here.
Yeah.
Shoot. I mean, you can go back through the drafts. And
I mean, Will Clark is definitely a win over Margus.
Right.
Again, kind
different
of
drafts, but
different
same
drafts, yeah.
Same concept.
Yeah.
But my point being, we've seen that time and again, and so maybe this is a chance for Jake Fisher to go figure things out, and maybe we don't view the picking of two tackles in the first two rounds of 2015 as a big mistake if Fisher ends up being a player.
Right. Yeah, one of these two got to start.
Somebody's got to play. Somebody's got to play. Eric Winston ain't getting younger.
Yeah.
And
hey, neither's Witt.
And definitely Witt is
a free agent. I mean, they've got – one of them needs to be a tackle.
Yes.
I mean, not all tackles. Some guys – it's like pitchers, right, in baseball. You're drafting your starter, and then you're just not a starter, and you're a reliever, and you're okay
because
those guys are valuable. I mean, but one of them has to be a tackle.
Yeah.
And then you see what the other one can be.
See what the other one can be. Maybe you move Mindegar.
Right.
Maybe you know, Witt obviously can eventually move into guard. But, yeah, so that's sort of where that's at. Really the biggest personnel development of the game against the Eagles. So we'll see where that goes from here. I think all expectations are that rotation is going to continue.
Yeah.
As they go forward into the rest of the season with the Browns this week. And then, obviously, with Pittsburgh coming to town. So keep an eye on that. Let's flip forward here. Let's do an AJ Green update.
Yeah.
Partly cloudy. Partly cloudy. Yeah, breaking the weather report out again last week. And I would expect partly cloudy again this week. He was out before the game on Sunday running a little bit. First we've seen that. So getting closer. But you're looking at one or two games this year if it happens. But anyway, he came out Friday. You were there and able to be part of a small group catching up with him. What were your thoughts on talking to AJ Green for the first time since his injury?
Yeah, the thing, one, he revealed the specifics of it. Grade 2, 50% tear, which is pretty severe. And he shrugs his shoulders, and we'll hear him here. He's like, it's not that bad. It wasn't off the bone, which,
that would be bad.
So, honestly, Paul, the thing that wasn't surprising was him to say, no, I'm going to try to play. And we kind of pressed him a little bit about, are you sure?
Yeah.
But really, it was more Marvin Lewis after the fact later on Friday, Paul, where I was like, hey, Marvin, I know you'd want all your guys to say they try to come back and play. But, AJ kind of had a different way about it, the way he was speaking, the way he looked. And Marvin flat out said he's a very unique person, unlike many in this building. And to me, and Marvin's looking at me, and it was one of those where he's looking at me and saying, without saying, a lot of guys would be done.
Right.
But AJ is not. AJ's going to play. If he's medically cleared the Saturday before Baltimore, he's playing against Baltimore.
Right.
And that's what he's, you know, and so that was what I took most from that sort of 5-6 minutes we had with AJ.
Yeah. Let's bring that. Let's bring that out here. AJ Green, for the first time talking with the media since his hamstring injury. So here's a good portion of that.
I really don't know what happened. Just felt like something grabbed on the way up, so.
Good. You ever had a candy?
Nope. So, all new.
That must have been weird.
Yep, I thought it was a cramp. But it's fine though, it's getting better. It's nothing too serious.
Was that, obviously we can only see how your face and how we think it looks like you feel. I mean, it looked like you were in a lot of pain. I mean, was it, as far as that day was concerned, was it a scary feeling if you've never had that before?
Well, like I said, it felt like a cramp, a real bad cramp. So I was like, oh, maybe it's going to go away. It never went away, so.
When did you realize it wasn't going away?
When I got up. So.
I was going to say, I assume you tried to walk and then realized you really couldn't.
Yeah.
So. Worst feeling in the world going to the car, huh?
I wouldn't say the worst feeling in the world. I was just happy it was not anything more serious than what it was, anything I had to have surgery or something like that. So,
how disappointing. I mean, AJ, you're having a, you know, your best year.
Mm-hmm.
Looked like you were, the numbers, you know, you were looking at 1,800 yards.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, how disappointing have that?
Like, I wouldn't say disappointing because things happen. You know, something I can't control. So I'm not going to get down on myself. I was playing very well. But things like that happen. So I don't say I'm disappointed. I'm just like, things happen. That's the type of guy I am. I don't look at, you know, injury being disappointment. I just, things happen. I'll just be back. Whenever I'm ready to get back, I'll be back and finish off where I left. So.
How big was this week, just a step in being able to get out on the rehab field and, you know, you're not in here just getting worked on.
Yeah, it felt good to get back and jog a little bit. Just coming from that game, I thought it was going to take these 2 weeks before I'd be able to walk the right way again. But it feels great. It gets better. It's getting better every day.
Did they give you any sort of timetable?
No timetable yet. I'm played safe. You know, I want to get back. No matter what kind of season we have, I'm not the type of guy to cast it in. Whenever it's ready, I'll be ready to go. But I'm not going to rush it because I don't want to have this as a continuous issue.
You know, some would say he has been out of it.
Yeah.
Why bother to come back?
No, that's not the type of guy I am. Not gonna bail out on my team because we're not having the season that we want to have. It's not the type of guy I am. I just, when I'm healthy, then I'm gonna go play no matter what. What week it is. If it's the last game I come back and I'm feeling good, then I'm gonna play the last game.
It's three. If you guys are three, 10 and 1.
Don't matter.
Is it almost insulting to hear people suggest that?
Yeah.
If you're out of it, don't.
Yeah, that's their mindset. That's definitely not my mindset. They pay me to play. You know, no matter what the case is, I'm going to play regardless. No.
Does 1,000 yards and joining Randy Moss, does that mean anything to you? Or would it, it's after
cool.
the fact, I
nah,
guess?
Nah, yeah, it's cool. It's cool, but like I said, I'm not going to put my whole career in jeopardize just because our record. I got a lot of football left to be played, and I'm not going to push it just to try to get that and have to miss more time next year or have surgery because I went out too early and tore it even more. So.
Do you think you'll be back by the end of the year, or you don't know?
We'll see. Yeah, like I said, the way it's going right now, and I feel like I'm just getting better every week, and we'll go from there.
Did they tell you what grade of strain it was?
Yeah, it was grade 2. Grade 2 tear. It was 50% torn. But
yeah, shit, that's not.
Yeah,
it's not minimal.
Yeah, it's not, but it's not bad. It's not tore off the bone or nothing like that. So, no surgery needed. How much does it suck? I mean, not only do you get hurt, but your team is just can't score.
No, yeah,
it's tough. Like I said, I've been around this. I've been here for 6 years, and we had some good offense. And you know, having not being able to score like we have in the previous years, you know, it's not good. But as a professional, you got to keep working. Like I said, this season's not the way we want it to go. But for me, I'm not going to quit, and I know this team is not going to quit. We're still going to give it everything we got. Even if people count us out, we're not going to quit. So.
To me, you know, the biggest thing with AJ and this whole thing is not, you know, him not bailing.
Said anything, I don't want to say negative, but just in the sense of this isn't right. And here's a problem.
Yeah.
You know what I mean, Paul? So I think this goes in along the same lines of that sort of newfound vocal leadership from a guy who's really shied away from that in the past.
Yeah. And notice after he said that in New York, guess, look what happened.
Yeah.
The rotation went back to 50-50, and then eventually Cedric Abue was benched.
Yeah.
To circle back to that. His words have power.
Yeah.
And anyway, so his words being, I'm not bailing on my team, there's no quit in me, is the same thing as the team motto going around, which is not dead, can't quit.
Right.
And what we've heard from everybody that when we rolled all those guys out last week that we are on the PBP, talking about how we're holding on to whatever we got to hold on to it. Yeah. We got to play for it. That's all we've got.
Real quick, Paul, just another funny anecdote about that was AJ, we were not supposed to see AJ Green last week. Marvin Lewis came out and said, that was the plan. AJ, you stay in the building till the media is gone. And then, because we don't want them seeing you. And he was just like, I'm going to do this. I'm coming out here.
Yeah.
So everybody sees. I don't know. He's a smart dude. Maybe I'm reading into it. Maybe he was just early. I don't know. I just find it funny.
He wasn't supposed to come out into the locker room?
No, into the practice field.
Yeah, so I thought, yeah.
Yeah, practice field, that's what I mean.
Yeah, but he wants everybody to see that he's trying to get back and that he's not going to hide it.
Because they've done that with other players.
Oh, absolutely.
So that's why
Tyler Eifert has talked to us about that a bunch.
Exactly.
He's like, I asked him many times, oh, have you done that before? Oh, yeah, I did it, but we all just wait until you guys leave.
Exactly. So that's why I bring it up.
Yeah, it's with purpose, and he was out there before the game in front of the Fox cameras doing his thing with Nick Cosgray, the director of rehab. So, you know, very, very much calculated. So we'll see. I do think he plays at least one game for the same reasons we've talked about.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Even if it's the idea of he's active and in uniform week 17 and he plays like three snaps.
Yeah.
They throw him a ball.
Yeah.
You know, or maybe it's one of those things, one shot.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Right. But you're right. I think it's more of, at this point, Paul, a lot of what the Bengals are trying to do is symbolic. A lot of what they're trying to do is feel good about ourselves and go into 2017 feeling good. You know, so I think this falls right in sort of line with.
You can't have a culture of negativity flowing into an offseason where there's, you know, we'll talk more about it as it evolves, but there's probably not going to be a lot of change. I mean, that's wrong. That's not that's not what I meant to say. I doubt the head coach is going to change, and I think you're going to have a lot of the same vibes from the coaching staff coming out. I mean,
you had all these people freaking out.
Yeah, no, sorry. There's going to be change. Everything's going to change. They're going to fire everybody, I swear. Everyone's going to go. No one will be left but AJ Green. I swear.
And A.J. McCarron.
And A.J. McCarron. Yeah, two people or less. The only things left laying around the building are going to be A.J. McCarron, A.J. Green, and, like, copies of my mock draft. That's it.
Yeah.
It's important. And so that kind of brings me to something that I wrote about in the walkthrough. And because I got a lot of after the game of I don't even care.
Yeah,
the win actually stinks because it just ruins our draft position and helps secure Marvin's job a little more. So I want him to lose out. I even got one where I'd rather they lose than actually get it together and make the playoffs.
Yeah, just so weird.
it's because Marvin will just lose there and go to 0-8. So you'd rather not see an incredible run to sneak into the playoffs,
which would mean your team is probably going to the Super Bowl,
right?
That's usually how that works.
When that weird stuff starts happening, things like that happen. Whatever.
Yeah,
I get it. Like people just get obsessed with having a high draft pick, and you know, I get a lot of I got in some conversations about, you know, drafts. This team needs to hit home runs this next draft.
I was about to say, for a team that actually, as we've kind of hinted at the last 4 weeks, hasn't really done a real good job with any of that.
They have got to hit home runs, but it's more than just having a high pick.
Right.
Quantity over quality. You know, go look at some of the top tens of the last few drafts and look at the just whiffs across the board.
Yeah.
There's tons of them. You're playing the percentages no matter where you pick.
Right.
You want to have more, and they're going to have more this draft. Would it be best to be higher? Yeah, but that doesn't make that big of a difference. They got some of the best players in almost every draft in recent years have come at 12 or 17 or 20, where if you went back and redrafted, would you be taking Aaron Donald?
Right.
First overall? Yeah, guess where he went? He was in the teens.
Yeah.
J.J. Watt in the teens. I mean, all these – go look at every draft. Yeah. I mean, it's
– You don't tell them, Paul. They know.
They know. They know. They know better than I do.
Yeah, they do. That's why they – you know why? Because they do their mock draft.
Yeah, and you know – shut up. So but it's funny. Someone's like, well, it was a good thing they were in the top five when they took – in 2011. Yeah. Yes. It was great that they because AJ Green was available
honestly,
at four.
Because 2011, Paul, is rolling into the category of 83.
Yes.
Like, you got, like, almost 10 Hall of Famers.
Right. An unbelievable.
I know.
A generational draft. Yes, absolutely. That was great.
Yeah.
That they were in the top five in one of the greatest drafts we've seen in recent memory.
Yeah.
But anyway, so point being is it's – They've got to reload this offseason, and there's going to be a lot of new blood in, but that new blood needs to be coming into a place of some sort of positivity or momentum.
And it's important, Paul, because, look, and we've touched on this as this team, as the season kind of went into the tank here, the culture of losing, it took a lot for Marvin Lewis to get rid of that. And in football, in my opinion, that can really invade quickly. You know what I mean? Because it's just guys who get used to it. They get used to kind of packing in when it's, you know, when it is 4-4. And they're like, oh, we've been here before. We're bad. Like, it's just not, you know, it's not a thing you want rolling in. You want those guys. You want these guys to be 7-8-1, 8-7, whatever it's going to be. But feeling, you know, like they won 4-5 or 3-5. And then it turns into, oh, if we weren't hurt. Like, you want them to think of only that. Look how good we were those last five games. Oh, if only, you know, Tyler Effort was there.
And come out next year only with urgency.
Right. Yeah. I know fans. I know it drives you guys crazy.
You hate this.
With that
you hate
stuff,
us right now.
But
you hate us.
It's honest to goodness, like, it's what happens in there.
Yep. It is.
And you don't, and honestly, if you're a Bengals fan, I know, like you said, Paul, they're like, oh, well, Marvin will get fired if they go 0-8-1. You don't want, that's just bad. It's just
if you lose your head coach, particularly now where there's not a clear in-house candidate,
right?
You're losing. I mean, you're taking a massive step backwards of when you're looking at a rebuild now because whoever comes in is going to want their own staff. They have to readjust to players and to this organization.
Yeah.
I mean,
and I understand
there's a lot to unpack there. I'm not gonna go that into it at this point in the podcast. But there's just a lot there. My point. So what I wanted to get into was something I got into in the walkthrough, and that's one thing Marvin Lewis actually has been pretty good at that people might not realize is not letting the team roll over at the end of bad seasons. 07, 08, and 10, his three losing seasons, they're combined 8-4 in the last four games of those 3 years. 07 led into 08, which went in the tank because Carson Palmer got hurt. 08 led into 09, which they won the division and came out of nowhere in Marvin Lewis Coach of the Year. 10, at the end of 10, the Fisher-Price group grew up. these kids named Geno Atkins and Carlos Dunlap and Michael Johnson started emerging, and they found a little bit of run at the end of the year, getting a couple of wins and playing better, and that led into the reboot of 11.
Yeah.
You can see these trends, and not a lot of teams that have losing seasons play well the last month. In fact, the majority don't. You go in the walkthrough on Cincinnati.com and look it up. I had all the numbers of the last 10 years teams finished with losing seasons. Only three have gone 4-0. And only, I believe it was 28, only 15% even had a winning record in the last four in years they had losing records overall. I mean, that's a tiny percent.
Yeah, because they're losers.
And Marvin Lewis has gone 2-2, 3-1, 3-1.
Yeah.
And there's something to that. So you take it further. Okay, well, look at some of those teams that had gone 4-0 in the last four games, even losing seasons. Playoff. Five of the seven were in the playoffs next year. Five of the seven won at least 10 games the next year. There's a build there. Now, what you need is the injection of young players that comes in at the end of season, and they play well.
Right.
That's what you build off of, and maybe we're seeing some of that. We have seen some more young players come in the last couple weeks and play decent.
Yeah, they're, and especially defensively, and you know, I kind of mealy-mouthed my question to Paul Gunther about this on Monday, Paul, but since the bye, you know, throw Gilberry out being the, but like Nick Vigil has seen a couple snaps, Clayton Fedulum's gotten a couple snaps last 2 weeks, Darquez Dennard finally
played more
on the field, has played a little better the last couple weeks, you know, so again, they don't have eye-popping numbers. You know, Will Clark had that run of sacks early, hasn't had one since, I don't believe, or if he has, I don't really remember.
No. Deshaun Williams got his first run of the season.
So I don't think that those guys necessarily going to play meaningful snaps, but they're playing some, which had not happened the first 6-7 weeks. And, of course, the receivers. James Wright, Tyler Boyd, Alex Harrison, guys who are filling in some gaps here.
Cody Core. With his first reception and a really nice one, 50 yards over the top, and had a nice slant. And, you know, Alex Erickson continued. He impresses me every time he's out there.
Yeah.
He gets open. He's got a great feel for the field.
Yeah.
He really does have good vision out there. Like a coach's son. He's real scrappy.
Yeah, he's scrappy. Tries real hard.
Yeah, he tries hard. High motor, really.
High motor. Yeah. You know what? He's in the playbook.
He is. He knows the playbook.
He does.
Yeah. It's part of being scrappy and a coach's son, really. But, you know, all those guys, you know, have had those young receiver herbs kids.
Yeah.
Have started to show where you can build on that.
Right.
Andy Dalton, really well. The Eagles brought, Brandon LaFell kind of talked to me a little bit about this after the game. He said, teams since AJ went out have been forcing them to pass and blitzing and leaving one on ones because they don't think the receivers can win.
Right.
That's what the Eagles did. And he said, you know, it's disrespectful to just continue to go one to play us one on one like that. And you got to win those. And those young kids, those young receiver kids, were winning them. And Brandon LaFell won some. And Tyler Boyd won. And that's big for this team in building some faith going forward. Because guess what? Andy Dalton had arguably his best game of the season. Spreading the ball around to all those kids.
Yep. Yeah, no, you're right, Paul. It was, and Tyler Boyd has played better of late. But yeah, you're right. To get out, Cody Core actually is probably the more interesting of all of them, you know, that late pick and big bodied, and you just kind of, you know, he was the inactive guy, you know, he was the odd man out. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, but he's been in the game plan since AJ was out. Remember, was it Baltimore? These games run together were just bad football, where they threw it to him first to kind of do the AJ 1 yard screen, you know, and so he's been out there sort of that guy, I guess.
There's a lot of interest in the building in him.
Yeah.
As you'd expect, but I mean, I think more than you would expect from a guy who was picked in the sixth round.
Yeah. And definitely not the high-profile guy, you know, out of Ole Miss in this last draft. So I'm curious to see.
Has the same amount of I think he has more receptions now than LaCron, Quan Treadwell.
And here's the thing. I'm curious to see if Ken Zampezi does what Paul Gunther did with Clayton Fedulum to Cody Core, meaning now – Core's had snaps, so unlike Fedge get in, you know, he makes a tackle for loss, nearly breaks Steve Smith's leg in a good solo tackle in Baltimore. Paulie's like, you know what? this kid's got to play a little bit more.
Yep.
I'm curious to see if you know, him bouncing back off that kind of that bungled whatever play where he tackled Rex Burkhead.
Yes.
And then he makes that great catch one-on-one.
But I see if he gets
more run now.
Yeah, that's just it. And I think that impressed Marvin Lewis more than anything was the next play made his big play after his screw-up and just sort of the overcoming adversity and showing a little bit of mental, you know.
Fortitude. Yeah. Wherewithal.
The only things you can have after mental.
Yeah.
Yeah, fortitude and wherewithal.
It could be a collapse.
Mental collapse, yeah.
So, you know, that didn't happen.
Yeah. No, it didn't. So there's something to that. And you know, he opened his press conference on Monday talking about those guys. It was the first thing he wanted to say.
Yeah.
He wanted to say how impressed he was with the young group of receivers. You know, shout out to James Urban, who really – no one really talks about it. No one cares about receivers, coaches. He really, since he's been here, has done a great job of developing receivers.
Yeah.
I'm not talking about A.J. Green. I'm pretty sure I could have developed A.J. Green. But there's something to that, to developing superstars. Well, A.J. has gone better year after year. Marvin Jones, Mohamed Sanu, James Wright even, and now these kids that are coming along a little bit.
Hawkins, right? He's been here. He was here for Hawk, right?
Yeah, Hawkins, absolutely. A guy who came from off the map to making big money. I mean, lots of guys he's worked with and done a great job with and doesn't get really near enough credit for the job that he's done. Let's get close to wrapping it up here and find out what's making you mad. Because it's something. I'm sure something's making you mad. I mean, are you gonna go chalk and go transit? Because I feel like you were driving around
a lot
this weekend.
It's kind of related. You know what makes me mad? Whitestown, Indiana makes me mad.
Wow, calling out an entire town.
Yeah, well, because you know what?
Sorry to all our listeners.
Their name is on the sign. So maybe I so
sorry,
you know,
John, that, Bob, Mary,
whatever that exit. Dude,
what goes on in Whitestown, Indiana?
I don't know. Messed up exit ramps.
Does it go off where the ramp comes off and it just turns into gravel when you turn to the right? Like, that's what happens to every exit in Kansas.
So, I need gas. I need food. There's a Pilot. There's a Subway. I'm like, cool, right there. Exit right, make a left, done, in, out, the way it's supposed to go. Make an exit. All of a sudden, there's some strange new road that's not the exit. Now I'm going off to the right into the farm. So then I got to go down, and then you got to whip a left. Okay, make a U-ey. I think I'm good, right? You just turned around, right?
Right.
Nope, that was wrong. All of a sudden, I'm going back down the other farm.
Sooner or later, you're
going
to have to kill a chicken yourself.
I don't understand how this exit was designed or what was happening. Now this may not be the town of – now that I blame on Whitestown. Now, the gas station itself, how do you roll into a gas station and every pump, the credit card machine doesn't work?
Did you have to go in?
I finally.
Or did you did you just throw $3 on the ground and run away?
No, I mean, I don't have cash, and I'm not going inside either.
No.
So instead, I raged in the Yaris. Dude, I went to one pump, get out. There's a little sign on it. Credit card machine don't work. I'm like, okay, that happens.
Yeah, it happens. Go to the next one.
So then I got to go to the next one. No sign on it. Doesn't work. There ain't no sign on it. Go to a third pump.
No.
No sign. Doesn't work. I'm raging in the car.
You went to the fourth one.
I did, and that worked. Only because it was a car that got in after me, which added to my anger.
Oh, because he got to the good pump.
He got to the good pump, filled up, and left by the time I did this whole business.
I've got a. That's excellent Yaris rage. I appreciate that.
So
I got,
it's kind of in transit, but it's really had.
I have an epilogue. I have a little extra additive to that of what makes me kind of mad is this happened the previous week when I was driving from Philadelphia down to Baltimore for the Ravens game. I had plenty of time. I wanted to get breakfast. It was a morning drive. I was looking for the Waffle House. There was lots of Waffle Houses actually along the drive. So I finally see the exit I want to get. It says Waffle House exit. Boom. I get off. I go down the ramp. Waffle House, three miles to the left.
I hate that one.
3 miles? No, there is a statue.
I hate that.
There's a statue of a certain amount of miles that you're allowed to claim yourself as being off the exit. Okay?
Yeah.
Three ain't it.
Nope.
More than two, I would say a mile and a half tops off an exit. And it wasn't like I'm getting on another highway. It was all back roads. It took me like 15 minutes to get to the Waffle House. So luckily, I had time, and I went, and they're delicious.
You know what that sounds like?
What?
Trying to find a Panera Bread.
Oh. The trip to Pittsburgh.
Yeah, trip to Pittsburgh.
Yeah, we'll just get off at this exit, go to Panera. Yeah. 25 minutes later, where are we going? You guys wanted to go to Panera. It's just 12 miles. 12 miles into the country.
Oh, that was unbelievable.
It really was unbelievable. Anyway, so that's that. That continues to be so jaggy. But you know what? Gus Bradley still hanging on to his job.
Yeah.
Not yet fired.
I think you're going to make it.
I think I might make it. We might get a push where he doesn't get fired till the season ends.
Yeah. Because why do it now?
I don't know. Unless why not do now? They just got officially eliminated from the playoffs. Yeah, I was worried about that.
Yeah.
But he seems to have survived that. I think they're going to let him run on the string out. Huge. Huge for me. Because that something crazy could happen elsewhere. You never know. Still waiting for Chip Kelly to just bowl for Oregon. You know, that job's open. Looks great. All right, so let's wrap this thing up. Remember, check in on the BBP2 later this week. Rex Burkhead is our guest on Tuesday night, Beyond the Stripes, 7 o'clock, Hopper House. Come on down. Rex, first time we've had him on the show. He's a big star here right now. So I'm sure his old man emoji might make an appearance, which we're big fans of. And we need a song to go out of. I went with like the Happy Days Are Here Again, which I believe is from the 30s, as a song of the game on the walkthrough. But do you have anything?
Well, I have a song because you kind of busted on me last week for not having one.
Yeah, because it's been
although
weak.
I don't think you're gonna pick it.
Maybe I will.
Well, in honor of Hugh Jackson and the Browns on the schedule this week, and Marvin Lewis being like, oh, there's a. It's a Ball of Knives. He won a bye week.
Yeah, Ball of Knives.
Ball of Knives. Well, so I was thinking, but it's the Browns, so it's more like a bunch of butter knives from Raekwon.
Yeah. Oh, butter knives. Oh, you're going with the actual butter knives song?
Yeah. I like which is that. Way harder than the Browns could ever be.
I'd be still pretty frustrated by a ball of butter knives. Like, that would just annoy me.
Yeah.
I was like, quit spreading on my face.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's so the song is way harder than the Browns, but it made me laugh. It made me think like butter knives. Those are the Browns.
The Browns are butter knives. And Hugh's like, I've got this whole ball I can put knives into, but all I have are butter knives. Not one steak knife. Not one.
So I at least have a suggestion this week.
We'll go with that. We'll go with Raekwon's butter knives to go out. I hope everyone enjoys. If you have song suggestions for us, send them to us on Twitter at Paul Daniel Jr. at Jim Osarski or email us. Our emails are on every story we write. So do that. We always want to hear from you. We appreciate hearing from you all the time. The good and the bad, and the mean. That's okay. Anyway, we will we'll talk to you later. Here's a little bit of Raekwon, and have a good one, everybody.
Hey yo, chef, that fly with a meat cleaver. Swing on a young, smack flames out of no gun neither. Leave him with a buck, what the f***?
They say he's a swordsman.
Who give a f*** if he a swordsman? I'm a f***, man, I run from nothing. Chain came from rim days and pumping. YSL with velours on. Drawers is colorful, I do this forever. Raw style, light and Phillies, fly by willies. Can't come through unless your vehicle 300 chain silly. Laying in the park with the killers, the coupes are villains. No rims, we just ball flipping millions. The emperors, slang lords, kings get clapped in their dome. Get your throne rushing, I ain't got a f***ing on. High power ninjas who touch you. Leg up, no. Drinking with the best of the hustle. I got butter knives like he got butter knives. Come through huddling. Run through the spot 30 times. All my old school robbers. Do what it do. I got a 62, a black pair of goggles. Feline approaches. The beehives, the vultures, and the roasters. Can't come through or see the toasters. It's going down only in the town. The heart get tested. And players only an investment. Flying shooters. I wear Rugers. Stars and swords in front of the building. 5,000 students. Cops, they know him.
They say he's a swordsman.
We already know that, man. Diamond Duck 007s. Come through 187. Back to the hill in a second.